scene. And Highway 1 South near the Soledad Drive off-ramp, a stalled vehicle there as well. 475-1080 is the number to call with your traffic tips. Your Central Coast weather for today, sunny. Highs in the lower to mid-80s today, partly cloudy later in the day. And tonight, clear with lows in the 50s. Tomorrow, also looking pretty clear for you, partly cloudy in the afternoon. Coming up next on KSCO, we have the Saturday special. Sitting in for MZ is Christine Kraft.
Good morning, a brighter day is here. Good morning, may we bring you cheer.
We've got time, we've got tunes, we've got time, tunes, and temperature.
Get up and go, it's today, you know, on KSCO Radio.
And quake-proof Santa Cruz is about 130 miles from the Diablo Canyon nuclear power plant. There's new information about it that you need to know about it. You'll hear it this morning on KSCO. Also, Ted Nugent and his death threats against the president. And an artist who just died. What makes art? I'm Christine Kraft. Stay tuned.
Good morning. Now stay right here on KSCO Radio.
And good morning, everyone. I am Christine Kraft. My pleasure to sit in for Michael this morning. He and Kay are out there gallivanting around the world, and we'll be back shortly. In any event, my pleasure to be with you. As I mentioned, in incredibly quake-prone Santa Cruz, and I remember well in 1989 as a reporter coming down with my camera crew from Sacramento to catalog the damage from the Loma Prieta quake in Santa Cruz, and it was just heartbreaking. And many of you, if you were there, then you recall that. And those of you who are new to Santa Cruz, you know, may have nothing to remember about that. But I remember going down street after street after street with houses off their foundation, you know, marked with tape, do not enter, et cetera, in the downtown area, lots of destruction. So as a longtime Californian who's lived coastally most of my life, though I don't do it now, it's always been a concern for me. And also nuclear power plants. The two nuclear power plants in California, Diablo Canyon and San Onofre. San Onofre, by the way, is shut down. They have some problems that we will talk with our guest about in a moment. But they provide about 14% of the power for California. So that's not insignificant. And it's important that we have sources of power, obviously, with our burgeoning, our growing population. But there's some very important issues that have been raised by the Fukushima quake, tsunami, nuclear power plant issues in Japan, as well as continuing quakes all around the world, very active time. Indonesia had a big one this morning. And so I thought we would bring on someone I've talked to in the past. Jane Swanson is going to be our guest. I don't know if she's on the line yet, but she'll be with us in a second. And Jane is has really been, for many, many, many years, she's Mothers for Peace down in San Luis Obispo, Abola Beach, where the Diablo Canyon power plant is. They have been incredible in attending for decades. I mean, not missing a one. Meetings of the Nuclear Regulatory Commission at Avila Beach about Diablo Canyon and about the safety of the plant vis-a-vis its earthquake faults. We've known for years that there's the Hoskrie Fault, which is about 2.5 miles offshore. They knew that when they built the plant. It wasn't until later that they discovered, oh, guess what? There's another fault that goes right along the edge of the plant, I mean right there, called the Shoreline Fault. And now they've discovered yet another fault. So we will talk to Jane about that, what PG&E is going to be doing, and also the down in San Onofre, the power plant down there, what their operator is going to do to examine the quake worthiness or safety of both of those plants, as well as evacuation plans for both areas. As I say, Santa Cruz is about 130 miles north of Diablo Canyon. Is Jane on the line yet?
Morning.
Good morning, Jane. It's so nice to talk to you again. And this is so very much in the news. I was telling our listeners here in Santa Cruz that you and Mothers for Peace have been so active over the decades and not missing a beat, because a lot of times these hearings will go by and people really are, their lives are busy. They can't go. So you guys have been going for years and chronicling all of this from the very beginning, since before the plant was built. And there's some developments now in the light of Fukushima and what happened there. What's PG&E going to do now that they've discovered yet another earthquake fault? There's the Hoskery, the Shoreline, and now something called the Diablo Cove fault.
Right. PG&E is doing extensive seismic studies on the ocean side of the plant. They were ordered to do so. They're not doing it out of the pure goodness of their hearts.
They're not?
I'm sure well, now, don't let me, excuse me, I didn't mean to run down those that work at Diablo or for PG&E. All those workers are wonderful people. I appreciate their care. My beef is with the corporate decision makers at the top that are just after making money for the shareholders at the expense of the safety of the residents of the Central Coast and beyond.
And we wouldn't quibble with the corporation's right to make, you know, to have the biggest return on their dollar for the shareholders. That's their fiscal responsibility, et cetera. However, public safety, they also have to be aware of. And in the light of what happened in Japan, it becomes particularly interesting. So they're being required, and I'm reading this report, and for our listeners, you might want to look at Bloomberg.com. They have an excellent article, PG&E Quake Risks at Diablo Nuclear to Undergo 3D Exam. They're going to spend, you know, a big chunk of money, $130 million, to get a better understanding of seismic hazards. And I guess they're using ships, and they're using planes, and they're using air guns, and the dolphins aren't too happy about that. But it almost seems to me, and I guess I'm cynical, Jane, and you may be also, that it's sort of a foregone conclusion. They're going to say, well, it's really no problem.
Well, yes, PG&E has declared that that the Diablo Canyon plant can withstand anything that Mother Nature can put out there. So, yes, they've already announced the conclusion of the study. They have not yet started. So that is a little bit of a scientific problem. Mothers for Peace, among others, lacks confidence that PG&E is going to do this study with integrity. For one thing, you know, and I've read the plans for their study. They don't even plan to study the Diablo Cove fault.
And that goes inland, yes. That's not right. It goes from the shore to inland.
It goes under Unit 1. It bisects the bedrock directly under one of the two reactors at Diablo Canyon. And then it continues offshore, and it may well connect with the Hoskery fault, and that's something that needs to be studied. But I haven't yet seen, and I've been asking this question in public venues, I haven't yet been able to uncover that PG&E plans to do that. They're planning to study the Shoreline fault extensively, and that needs to be done. They're doing this because California Senate, AB 1632, that bill requires them to do it, and the Public Utilities Commission is doing some excellent efforts to hold them accountable to doing a quality study.
Now, do we still have Republican State Senator and former ExxonMobil Corporation seismologist? He's a Republican. He drafted this 2006 California law, which is now requiring these seismic reviews. Is he still in office? Excuse my naivete on that. I don't know if he isn't, but he's been pretty good on require and at least having the state have some interest here. Because the NRC has been woefully derelict, in my view. I mean, they just sort of, it's sort of a rubber stamp for the nuke industry. The state, and I remember back in the good old days, and you do too, Jane, I was anchoring the news down in Santa Barbara, and we came up and covered a lot of the hearings prior to the building of that plant. And I remember when Jerry Brown was very, very active in requiring at least some, he was very firm on holding PG&E accountable. I think now he's governor again, and that's great, except his wife sort of runs the show, quite frankly, and has lots and lots of corporate friends. So I don't know if Jerry Brown will get involved in this one at all.
Yeah, I don't know that either, but in answer to your question, Sam Blakesley is still in the state senate in California and still active and very outspoken about his doubts about Diablo Canyon and the seismic requirements there.
And he's a seismologist, go ahead.
Yeah, he knows his stuff. Yeah, Mother Trapeze has taken action because, like you, we don't trust the NRC or anybody else here. So we are among, together with a group of 37 other intervener groups, meaning these are citizen groups with legal standing with the NRC because we live close to a nuclear power plant. We have filed a legal petition. It's not like the petitions you sign in front of the grocery store. This is a legal document we filed with the commissioners, the five commissioners at the top of the food chain of the NRC. And we are demanding that the NRC make huge improvements in its requirements for emergency planning, given what we've learned from Fukushima. And all of our requests are a match for what the near-term task force that the NRC itself appointed to study the Fukushima lessons to be learned.
Yeah, so you're not doing something that's completely wacky and out of sync. You're looking at their own documents and their expressions of concern and saying, okay, well, here's your concerns right back at you. We are the people who live here. We have standing to ask you to actually live up to the standards that you're trumpeting as things you're concerned about.
Exactly. We're saying act upon what your appointed staff has pronounced as essential because they're dragging their feet. Four of the five NRC commissioners are dragging their feet and they're, you know, saying, well, we'll get around to it in a few years. But what we're saying is, you know, that the 10-mile emergency planning zone is not adequate. The NRC announced publicly that U.S. citizens in Japan within a radius of 50 miles needed to evacuate, and yet for U.S. plants, it's just a 10-mile radius. To add
disconnect there, big disconnect. And as people listen to this, and I'll say, folks, you can call in if you would like to and talk about this on KSCO and talk to Jane as well. Yeah, that's very interesting. On the one hand, if you're in Japan, an American in Japan, 50 miles is 55, whatever. If it's in California, 10, no problem. And that just does not make sense.
And in fact, it's more dangerous in California because the Japanese plants, the spent fuel in the pools was not densely packed as it is at the California plants. In the California plants, the spent fuel rods, and spent means they're more radioactive than when they're put into the reactor. That's why they have to be removed. They're too hot. Mm-hmm. So here you have 5 times the density that those spent fuel pools were designed for, packed into those pools, so that if the top foot and a half is uncovered with the cooling water, you're guaranteed fire. You're guaranteed a fire into the atmosphere, and that radiation would go wherever the wind blows. And I'm not speaking for Mother Trapeze. I'm telling you what the National Academy of Sciences said. We get our information from the experts with the PhDs. We don't make up our facts.
Now, you don't suppose there could be an earthquake along, say, a coinciding of the shoreline fault, the Hoskery, the Diablo Cove fault, which runs right under one of the reactors that they've just discovered. You don't suppose there could be an earthquake and the spent pools are, you know, on the landscape there as well, out in the open, that could drop the water level in those pools by a mere foot and a half and cause a problem? An earthquake couldn't do that, could it? And I say, you know, it tongue-in-cheek.
Yeah, of course. Well, one of the big questions is, to what extent are these earthquake faults? 13 of them near Diablo Canyon count, 13. And some of them are undoubtedly connected. There are geologists that have already presented evidence that they are connected, meaning they could set off, you know, combined earth movement on more than one fault at a time, which would surprise the smug people in charge of Diablo Canyon by throwing something bigger at them than they expect.
Well, they can handle anything Mother Nature has to offer. Of course, there really is no Mother Nature. There is nature. But I think that's arrogance at the max. Can I just ask you, if Diablo Canyon or this plant were sited someplace where there was no earthquake issue, would you be less involved in protesting? In other words, are you opposed to nuclear power per se, or because this particular plant, more importantly, sits in this massive faulting that they, and I remember well when they first discovered, oh my goodness, there is a fault. Well, we'll have to do some retrofitting and make things stronger. And I remember at that time they did so with reverse blueprints. They were so concerned about it. It's almost as if they figure, well, everything in life is dangerous, and of course it is. But let's don't tell people the full extent of what could happen.
Yes, PG&E's record on protecting public safety is abysmal. Current listeners to your radio show know that from the San Bruno. That's the same company.
And the gas explosion, right.
Yeah, they didn't bother to truly study their high-pressure lines. They lied about it. And
they don't even know now. In fact, what we're discovering as we hear more about any inquiries into the San Bruno tragedy is that what we're really discovering is this woeful lack of knowledge about how the system really works and where various portions are placed and whether or not they've been tested. And PG&E just kind of claims, gosh, we don't know. So
right,
this should not encourage people to be to feel that they're being honest about Diablo Canyon.
Oh, of course not. And, yes, they did in the mid-'80s when they were ordered by the NRC to do some seismic bracing, given the fact that there was an earthquake fault nearby that they didn't know when they built the plants.
Mm-hmm.
The oil industry knew those Hawesbury fault was there, but, golly, PG&E didn't know it.
Mm-hmm.
So they did the bracing for one of the units. They read the blueprints in reverse, so they had to take it all apart and start over again. That took years and billions of dollars. When you talk dollars for seismic studies, dollars for retrofits, it's no problem for PG&E because it's the rate payer that pays for that, not the shareholder. It's the rate payer that pays for PG&E's errors. And in answer to your fundamental question, no, we don't accept nuclear power plants anywhere on the planet as okay, not at all, because by definition they create radioactive waste, and the reality is there is no solution to what to do with it. Even burying it in salt mines is not the answer. We don't want that stuff on the highways. We don't want it on the rails. We don't want terrorists getting hold of it. It's totally irresponsible. The next 1,000 generations are going to be having to safeguard this stuff that is lethal for 240,000 years. And when you think that the record of mankind, you know, when they started domesticating animals and farming, that was 10,000 years ago.
Yeah, and mere blip. Yeah, exactly.
Oh, my God. Talk about arrogance. That mankind cannot take on this responsibility and pass it along to forever. And we've got to stop using nuclear power because we do have many of alternatives that are available right now. And, again, I'm quoting the experts, California Energy Commission. If you've got time to go to their website, they have wonderful segments on sustainable energy and renewable energy. And we don't need that 14% of California energy from nuclear. We could get that down to zero and shut those plants.
But you see, the sustainable and renewable and sort of common sense approaches are often ones that people can't make tons of money on. Corporate interests can't.
Right. Lots of people can make money on them, but not the giant utilities. That is correct, because when you start using sustainables, you're decentralized. You're not dependent on, you know, Southern California Edison that runs San Onofre and PG&E that runs Diablo Canyon. You can have lots of small companies dispersed throughout that do their solar, wind, tidal, biomass, geothermal, and not to mention energy efficiency and conservation and making our buildings less. A huge amount of our energy is used to heat and cool buildings, and we have techniques now to address that so that it would greatly lessen that amount of energy needed. In fact, the California population per capita, we in this state, we're leaders. We consume less electrical energy now than we did 10 years ago, less per capita, because our California Energy Commission has done a fabulous job of putting out their incentives and requirements for us to be conserved.
Yeah, but you know how it is when anyone dares suggest, and I remember President Obama suggested this in terms of fuel and, you know, conserving fuel. Oh, my God, you can't deprive us. And it wasn't a question of deprivation. You just want to get smarter about uses of something, quantities of which are limited. And speaking of gasoline particularly. And he suggested something as simple as making sure the inflation on the tire is correct. And people, oh, isn't that terrible? They're demanding that we do this and that, and it's socialism and this and that. And yet people who are smart appreciate that even in your own life, day to day, you look for ways to cut your energy consumption and to marshal the forces that are on your side for free. I use a solar oven, and here in Sacramento, which is hot beyond all belief, and I would go nuts even more if I didn't figure out ways of harnessing that energy in a simple sense. That's really very easy to do, and it's very self-satisfying to realize that I don't have to pay for that power to bake bread or whatever in the summertime. It's a sort of a mindset I think Californians embrace more than other people in the world, perhaps.
Here's one technique we could use to eliminate the need for nuclear power plants in California immediately. Well, within a very short time. Mm-hmm. Get this. A third of the power generated by our giant plants, whether they're nuclear or natural gas or whatever, mm-hmm. a third of the energy, electrical energy produced, is lost in those big transmission lines. They leak, one-third lost.
So a better investment, might be to fix the transmission line so you're not losing such a huge chunk of the power. In other words, the fact that we've put up with that is outrageous.
Of course, and that wouldn't cost, that's no sacrifice. You don't have to live in the dark. You just insulate the grid, the wires for the grid. That's a no-brainer, but I don't know. Hasn't been done. The utilities don't want to do that.
And I want to ask you, because you live right near this plant, and I have other friends who live down there, people we both know, et cetera, and there hasn't been any people will say, well, there nothing's happened yet. It's been safe for all these years, et cetera. But you're concerned, obviously, should there be an event, and as I say, we're just finding out about this new faulting that runs right under the plant and has really yet to be totally examined. What about evacuation plans for the good people in Avila Beach and San Luis Obispo?
It's totally crazy, and that, again, is why we have filed this legal action demanding a change there, because what we are told by our county and state office of emergency services, this is what we're told if we live within a 50-mile radius of Diablo Canyon plant. Listen to your radio, and they will tell you whether to, one, shelter in place, which means you put masking tape around your doors and windows and turn off your heaters, or get in your car and go sit on the freeway, which will be totally clogged. We have one road north-south, the Highway 101. That's the only way you can leave this county. That'd be clogged in about 2 minutes. Parents would be in a panic to pick up their children from school, even though they're told not to do that. What parent would not want to go get their young child? Sheltering in place, it's probably better than sitting on the freeway, and that might help. If the plume was very cooperative and it just blew over and went and poisoned Arizona, Nevada, some other state, that'd be nice. But, Fukushima, again, has taught us that if you have a major radiation release, it's not a matter of hours. It's not a matter of days. It's still happening at Fukushima. You got a major release. You have made land uninhabitable. Whichever way the wind blew, you've made land uninhabitable. You can't grow crops there. Certainly couldn't eat the crops there. You can't live there. Your buildings, your houses, your businesses are not insured against any radiation contamination. So the economic cost and the displacement of people is not manageable. So this petition is demanding improvements in emergency planning, but that doesn't mean that we'll all be safe. No big deal, The probability of a major radioactive release from a nuclear power plant is, you can't calculate it. I'll go with the fact that it's a low probability. But excuse me, the consequences are catastrophic. And we have California and national laws that say, specifically NEPA, National Environmental Policy Act, that say if the consequences of even a low probability event would be catastrophic, it must be taken into account. It must be mitigated. Now, I don't know how you mitigate a fire in a spent fuel pool.
I think they just figure that they'll take their chances, they'll take their profits, and if something bad happens, well, everything is dangerous, and oh well.
Exactly, and then they'll get in the corporate jets and go somewhere else. Leaders.
I want to ask you, why should people in Santa Cruz who are hearing this in the Monterey Peninsula care about this?
Well, you know, once radiation gets into the atmosphere, radioactive particles get into the atmosphere, it goes where the wind blows. Now, Santa Cruz is not in the direction that the winds usually blow from Diablo Canyon, but there are times when they do go north rather than southeast towards Santa Barbara County and Los Angeles, etc. But still, you know, Fukushima has changed our planet forever. Those of you in Santa Cruz don't eat the seaweed that's harvested off Santa Cruz. I'm not eating Pacific Ocean fish or seaweed anymore at all, because it is known that it's radioactive. They've measured the iodine in the kelp, and if there's radioactive iodine in the kelp, creatures, there's also, you know, cesium and strontium, and the fish have been eating it, so I can't eat any big ocean fish anymore. I'm thinking about trout from the Midlands, but that's contaminated too. So you can't suck this radiation back in. You can't control where it goes. And any addition of radioactive contamination in the atmosphere, in the water, in the crops, it's all bad.
And because we know there is already background radiation all the time anyway. I love this argument because, there's radiation and everything. And, you know, yeah, we get that. The problem is that certain cancers and cellular changes, it's cumulative in the human body. You may have absolutely no exposure. Say you never had an X-ray or even worse in terms of ionizing radiation, a CAT scan, which are huge amounts of radiation. And there is, by the way, medical times when they use medical diagnostics that harm people with the ionizing radiation of too many X-rays, too many CAT scans. Every person is different, and it's cumulative over a lifetime. So, yes, there is background radiation, quote-unquote, in many places in the earth, in people, et cetera, but cumulatively, that's what causes cellular changes. One wants to mitigate and lessen and have the least amount of exposure as is reasonably possible.
Yes, there's another major point there, because when the industry talks about, it's only as much radiation as if you took a plane trip that was 5 hours in the air, you know, they're talking about ionizing radiation that's, you know, in the air, and the gamma rays go straight through you, okay? But there's another kind of radioactive contamination. Those are particles that are ingested. You breathe a radioactive particle into your lungs, it stays there. That's a whole lot more harmful than the gamma ray that just runs through you. So, or you eat something that has strontium 90 in it, and then that migrates to your bones because your bones think it's calcium. It's taken up as calcium is. So internal contamination is much worse than just the stuff floating through the air. And that's what's happening to the people in Japan. So I am so, so, so sorry and sad and upset, because we're going to see birth defects and deformities for generations in Japan caused by the contamination that those poor people have suffered.
And let me give out the call-in number, folks, for our listeners on KSCO. It is, of course, area code 831 if you're out of the local area. The phone number, 479-1080, if you'd like to talk to Jane or me about this Diablo Canyon information. Once again, it's 479-1080. We'll be happy to take your calls on this here on KSCO. Now, San Onofre, another nuclear power plant, of course, down near San Diego, San Clemente area, it's shut down completely right now. What do you know about that one, Jane?
Yeah, I've studied the news reports. I know all about Diablo, but I know a fair amount about San Onofre. And what I know is that, they're surrounded by a population of 3 million plus, whereas Diablo Canyon, we're low population zone. We only have, like, you know, 500,000 if you take in Santa Barbara County downwind. But San Onofre has it has some new, within the year, I believe, steam generators. They were manufactured in Spain.
Brand new.
And they melt. Mm-hmm. Yeah, brand new, replacing the other ones that failed, right? Mm-hmm. So they have these little tubes, like miles and miles of little tiny tubes inside there, and they have failed at such a rate that the NRC ordered both units to shut down, and they're still shut down. They still don't know why, for sure, what caused the failure of these tubes. I personally have high hopes they'll never reopen those plants, just as the four plants in in Fukushima will never reopen. That was just officially finally declared, I think, a couple of days ago. So, yes, San Onofre is a huge mess. It's very, very poorly run. And, you know, if people are wonks, it is possible to go to the NRC's website and read the inspection reports for the nuclear power plants, any of them in the nation. It's involved to download them, but it's doable, and there's a help desk. It's very nice. So if you want to read the inspection reports and find out how big a mess San Onofre and Diablo Canyon are, that is possible to do, and that's what I do over breakfast. The first two pages of each inspection report are absolutely fascinating. That's when they lay out the failures. And then after that, it gets pretty full of jargon, but, you know, it's comprehensible.
And here's the thing. Do you think many people, I mean, most of us don't have time, we would argue, or we're busy doing other things. Most, and I don't see, maybe I'm missing something. I was pleased to see the Bloomberg piece that I'm looking at. But I don't see a lot of coverage of this in, I mean, I see a lot of things about Kim Kardashian's bottom, et cetera, et cetera. I don't see much of an inquiry into this incredibly important issue by the major media nationally or in the state of California or in your area. What do you see?
To get the news, most of it's going to come if you're an online searcher or if you watch Rachel Maddow. She's done some fantastic reporting on specifically Diablo Canyon.
Thank you, Rachel.
Yeah, so you have to kind of know where to go. But the general public, no, doesn't see it. Now, whether or not that has something to do with the fact that these giant utilities, the two giant utilities in California, buy a lot of ad space in those newspapers,
no.
I don't know. But it crosses one's mind that that might be a part of it. Yes, one sees evidence of that. But, yes, the Bloomberg piece is really excellent, and one of those reporters, Julie Johnson, she did come. She spent, I think, 2 days in interviewing some of us around San Luis Obispo County, and she quotes Sam Blakesley, the state senator who's been involved. It's an excellent article. They had other reporters who were down in San Onofre, so I'm really, really happy with Bloomberg right now.
Absolutely. I want to ask you about something else. Did PG&E send out potassium iodide to the residents in your area around the plant?
No, I have a lot of trouble finding out about that. You know, they make it available through, here's what I read, but I made some phone calls and didn't find it a couple of years ago. They make it available through the health department, but then you have to, it's hard to get your hands on it. You have to show where you live and who's in the household, and they only give you, like, enough dosage so that each member of your family could have the proper dosage. And it's tricky because if you take it too soon, it's not going to help you.
And this is to block the iodine isotope that could cause thyroid cancers, et cetera. It's just one of the many isotopes released in when what happened at Fukushima, say, were to happen at Diablo Canyon or San Onofre or any plant. That's one of the first things, and it's one of the only things, actually, because I don't know how you stop cesium-37 and some of these other things. But for thyroid cancer, an appropriate amount of potassium iodide can protect you for some period of time.
Yes. So it's the thyroid gland only that's protected by that. It's not the rest of you. Mm-hmm. And schools are not allowed to have potassium iodine there. Now, if you think about it, should there be something horrible happen when children are in school and the schools are not allowed to have potassium iodide or to administer it to a child? I guess they could have it, but they can't give it to a kid. Then it's, you know, you got a big problem there. And if you don't take it at the right time, again, it's not going to do you any good. So there's, right, that's a big problem.
And I remember doing it for Fukushima because I thought, gee, this has a potential with the spent fuel pools and the multiple reactors, et cetera. And I don't trust, quite frankly, our government. They don't want to alarm us about these things. You know, I mean, I appreciate that because they can't handle what would happen if people were truly informed on any subject, much less this one. And you don't want to create a panic. I get all that stuff. But I thought, just supposing it gets really, really worse and worse and we're not getting good information for days after Fukushima, if you tried to find out which isotopes are being released into the atmosphere, you virtually couldn't find it out. It was all hush-hush, wasn't it? And I recall actually buying some online.
Well, actually, you know, the same thing happened at TMI, Chernobyl. You know, every radiological release on this planet, the first step of emergency planners and utilities is don't upset anybody, don't give them any information. Three Mile Island, those people didn't know what the heck was going on for many, many days. They didn't even order pregnant women and small children out of the area for, I don't know, it was over a week.
Because it might upset the populace if you were to do something that prudent to do that. They didn't want to create a sort of panic, so they were willing to jeopardize the lives of unborn children, et cetera, so as to not have a larger PR problem. And as you're saying, I don't think there's anyone who has a bit of logic who can't see that they're not going to be telling you the truth in any event.
That is for sure, and that's a huge problem for the public and for the utilities. If we can't trust them, then it's guaranteed the public is going to panic, and we know through history we can't trust them. So it's a shame, and I don't know what the answer is. I mean, I have personally stocked up on duct tape. I don't think sheltering in place is an answer, but you know, it would depend on the circumstance, but I kind of think it's not as, it might at the very beginning be less stupid to use duct tape than to sit on the freeway, because that highway.
Exactly. I mean, if, as you say, there's one major road out of there. And it would be quickly jammed. People would be panicked. They'd be running out of fuel. It would be a nightmare.
Absolutely. And Avila Beach is the community closest to the plant, 6 miles, I believe. There's one small road that comes and goes from there to connect it to the freeway. And that road's going to be clogged with equipment going in to, you know, try to help with whatever happens, should something horrible happen. And those people are really going to be trapped, and they're worried about it. They've had meetings about it. And the response has been, a partial response is that emergency services says they're going to get all the boats out at Avila Beach, and then people can get in the boats and be evacuated that way. So I don't know how many that would serve, and a lot of people who live at Avila Beach are elderly people who have retirement homes there. I'm not sure I can see them jumping in little rafts and boats, but anyway, that's the best we can do.
One of the things that I've noticed, and as I've looked at this and thought about it, and I've actually been right outside the plant in a Boston Whaler many years ago after it was first built, doing a news story. And I have to tell you, when they say, oh, but it's firmly on bedrock, I'm sorry, haven't geologists found, I mean, you can see strata in that cliff in other words, layers, it's not bedrock per se, this argument that it's solid rock and no earthquake could affect it.
Yeah, I don't know the definition of bedrock. It is built on rock, not loose sand, so that's, you know, all right. But
there's strata. You can see layers.
Well, yeah, so how much that rock is going to shake and what direction it's going to go. You know, it really matters what direction things shake. If you think about it, the tall, skinny structures, like the piping that goes vertically high and the electrical wiring to connect different parts of the plant, that's more at jeopardy should there be an earthquake than the containment dome. I'm not worried about the containment dome tipping over. Yes, it's concrete, many, many feet thick. And so that's nice to have that around the reactors. However, as we saw at Fukushima, the spent fuel pools are a whole lot more vulnerable to terrorism, frankly, as well as to Mother Nature. The spent fuel pools at Diablo and San Onofre are covered by a few inches, I think 4 inches, but it could be 6, of concrete. But that wouldn't stop a shoulder-fired missile with a explosive tip on the end of it. That could get in there and start a fire. And I'm not giving away secrets. That's all in documents that are on the NRC website.
Just common sense, right.
Well, yeah. So So, right. So the claim that Diablo Canyon can withstand whatever number they want to say, 7.5 earthquake, that's, again, arrogant. It isn't known, and there are parts of the plant that are not seismically protected. They say, well, that's on the non-nuclear side of the plant. Excuse me, it's all one complex beast, and everything needs to work right together, or the thing gets out of control again.
Exactly. If the side that is supposedly, you know, non-nuclear, whatever, if that is compromised, it's all one big critter. It's all interrelated, so it may not directly release radioactivity into the atmosphere, but the fact that it broke down because of a quake, not seismically protected, and it went, would affect the functioning of the parts of the plant which are emitting, which contain radiation.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, there's really no excuse. Getting back to this emergency petition that the legal petition Mother Trapeze and others have filed, there's also part of it that demands better training, because the training for what to do in the case of a radiation release, what they do now is it's staged, it's planned. The FEMA people come, plant personnel come. I volunteered to be a citizen to participate in a drill mm-hmm. on what to do in case of an evacuation, and it was such a joke. I was told to play a role, so I was given a name to pretend and a location where I live to pretend, and I was supposed to be really upset and ask questions and be very worried about my children in school. So I showed up when I was supposed to. All this was pre-planned, of course, at the evacuation center, which is an evacuation center. It's a fairground in Santa Maria, which is about 30 miles from the plant.
Gotcha.
So I showed up, and I asked, they pretend to wand you and check you for a radiation level, and they told me, you know, in this role playing, that my contamination was not bad, so I could go on in. If your contamination is too high, they take you to a tent and take all your clothes away from you and give you a little green thing to wear, and they dispose of your clothing somehow. A friend of mine went through that. But I asked questions as I would if it were real, and I said, well, what is the radiation limit that you consider acceptable? And they didn't know. And I said, well, what's the difference between the limit acceptable for adults versus children? Because children are four times as vulnerable to radiation health effects as adults. And they didn't know what I was talking about. I could go on and on. Anyway, this drill was ridiculous. And the Cal Poly people, we have a state university, California Polytechnic State University
yes.
here, has a population of it's at least 16,000. So when it's in full swing between the staff and the students, you got somewhere around 16,000 people there, or maybe 12,000 at a time. They don't have drills on campus. And most of these students, they live somewhere else. I mean, they come to this university from some other community. And, you know, I chat with them when I see them at their part-time jobs, and I'm on campus.
Are they aware? Are they aware of much of this, or blithely unaware?
No, blithely unaware. There's a few student activist environmental groups, thank goodness, that are doing their best to start to educate the population. But it's not like the university has a drill so that everybody knows what to do. They have radiation shelters on campus, but nobody knows where they are and how well they shelter for how long, I don't know. So, I mean, the training of the general public, it doesn't happen. And the role-playing training of the first responders and volunteers is a total joke. So
is absolutely woeful, and they wouldn't be able to handle the reality would it occur. So to say, if the plant says, or PG&E says, oh, we have all these evacuation plans, and this community is aware of it, and we've done the role-playing thing, and if Cal Poly said, well, we have radiation shelters on campus, we've done our due diligence, et cetera, the fact of the matter is completely removed from that sort of public relations kind of nonsense.
Right, exactly. And another element of our lawsuit here against the NRC is that not only should evacuation zones be at least 50 miles, but ingestion zones need to be 100 miles. In other words, there needs to be a plan to make sure people can find uncontaminated food out to as far as 100 miles from the plant. Again, that is directly from the work of the NRC near-term task force, which found that food sources were contaminated 100 miles away from Fukushima. So, you know, what are you going to do? Eat radioactive food? That's
not You'd have to. You'd have
well,
to.
Well, I mean, they do that in Japan. The people that are unable to get away because they're not given any, you know, monetary support to leave their homes and farms, some of those families are sending their children to relatives in another part of Japan, but the parents are staying there to try to save their land and take care of things, and those parents are eating radioactive food because there's nothing else. It's horrible.
And I imagine what PG&E and the NRC would say there are damages due to an earthquake and releases, et cetera, at Diablo Canyon. They would pay for the damages that the local citizenry gets.
Let us talk about the Price-Anderson Act. Holy Toledo. The Price-Anderson Act will pay is the national legislation that limits the amount of liability for any given radiation release. I'm trying to find my notes and I can't see them, but anyway, it's something like $12 billion, which is a drop in the bucket of the damage that would be done. And of that $12 billion to reimburse people for loss of property, whatever, like something like $375 million of it would be coming from the industry itself, and the rest would be coming from the taxpayer. So the taxpayers are
on the hook.
They were on the hook. And the reason for that is there is no private company insurer. Insurance companies will not insure any business, home, agricultural land. They won't insure against a radiological release.
But that makes no sense, because the proponents of nuclear power have said, you know, it's not dangerous. Everything is a little bit dangerous, and yes, you know, there are problems, but it's basically not dangerous. We need it for the power. But if it's such a good risk for the populace to have plants like this, if it's such a great risk for everybody and such a benefit, total benefit, it's clean power, blah, 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 why won't any insurer pick up that challenge? It seems to me it would be financially terrifically beneficial for some insurer.
The reason they won't do it is because the insurers are the real experts in risk assessment, and they know better. They know better. So we should pay attention to them. And everybody listening to this program needs to know that your home is not insured, and you would get pennies on the dollar should it become uninhabitable. Same for a business or anything. I mean, read your homeowner's policy, and somewhere down there you'll find the small print that says exclusions, you know, radiological release from anywhere, whether it's a weapon or a terrorist or a nuclear power plant or that fuel fire, your private insurance will not cover that.
Are you disheartened, and I guess I know the answer to this, that President Obama, bowing to a lot of political pressure, has, they're building new nuclear power plants, some in Georgia, et cetera, and they're saying, well, this is the modern technology that we're going to be using. You know, we've upgraded the ability. And look what's happened. They'll say, look at France. France gets much of its power. Parts of Europe get much of their power from nuclear power plants with never any problems at all. What do you, Jane Swanson, have to say about that?
Well, first of all, France has a lot of problems and a lot of protesters, and what they do with their radioactive waste is they send it to The Hague in the Netherlands, where they quote-unquote reprocess, which includes dumping the low-level waste into the English Channel. So it's very controversial, and they don't run with no problems. They've had nuclear power plants. They had to shut them down because their cooling water came from lakes that got overheated in hot weather, and it's a mess. So let's see, what was the first part of that? Was about, I lost you. What was the California part of that?
Oh, and now I've forgotten. See, it's this memory lapse at this point.
I skipped to France, but I should come back to the United States where I know. Oh, do we get discouraged? Well, there's a lot of bad news out there, but it's not
about the president and Savannah and that plant and all of that.
Yeah.
They're saying our technology's better now, and there's virtually no risk, and we've really figured all these things out. And the political pressure on him, and you've got all the Republicans, praise the Lord, who really want to just nuke the bejesus out of this country, and in their cozy relationships with the corporations that build them, and say, what's wrong? They're not building enough, et cetera, et cetera. So you'll see this as a mantra in the election year.
What I can say is there is no nuclear renaissance, and the two or three units that are authorized to be built in Georgia, that's the extent of authorization of new plants that are a different design. Well, they're having huge economic and other problems. There is no assurance they will be built. It's on paper, and that's all right now. So there's hope there, and people who want more information should check out Nuclear Information Resource Service, NIRS. If you do a search for NIRS, Nuclear Information Resource Service, they follow these things really well. This is a think tank, an environmental think tank that does wonderful work, and Mothers for Peace relies on them for a lot of information. So when I read their take on that, it helped me take heart. But, yes, we get discouraged. But we keep going because we're a local group, by the way. We're not national. San Luis Obispo Mothers for Peace is local because that's why we have legal standing to oppose Diablo Canyon, because we live right here next to that plant.
What if every single person listening to KSCO right now, Santa Cruz, Monterey Peninsula, et cetera, every single person actually took the time to do something as serious as go to the NRC, the websites you've mentioned, and actually get informed about all of this?
To the Mother for Peace website. We'll tell you, we'll give you some actions. You can send email to me through our website, and we'll say, here's what you can do where you live.
And what's the website? Give us that.
It's mothersforpeace.org. Really simple. All one word, mothersforpeace.org. We have a Facebook page, too, that's right there on the right side of the website, or you can go straight to Mothers for Peace at Facebook. And that, they're very different. The website has history going back to 1973, actually before that, to 1968 or so.
Mm-hmm.
Everything you want to know, all the legal documents are there, expert testimony. It's a very wonky thing for people who want the meat. And the Facebook page, we're posting current reports, current information, current status. So the Facebook page is more current information, whereas the website is historical, but it does go up to the present also.
With good links and do you think if enough people were to get involved and to really get what's going on, it could make a difference? You must think that, Jane, you wouldn't persist.
Well, absolutely, yes. Mothers for Peace did start as an anti-Vietnam War group, and I don't actually think Mothers for Peace brought that war to an end. But we were part of a huge national movement, and eventually the political leaders followed the lead of the public, because the public was screaming, get out of Vietnam. We're tired of this war is not serving any purpose. So we just need the mass of activist humans throughout this nation saying, we don't need nuclear power. Give us sustainable. Make the utilities provide sustainable. Let private companies or small companies to decentralize sustainable energy for us. Get us out of this deadly industry.
Fix the grid. And fix the grid also. Instead of losing a third of all the power, fix the grid so that we're at least conserving what it is we produce.
Absolutely. So, it's going to take all of us. Those elected to office are not leaders. They are tools of the corporations that fund their campaigns.
That's right.
Only way we can fight this, we can't fight it with money. We have to fight it with people power and a mass public opinion that has to be expressed. If you just think it in your head, you don't do anything about it, nobody knows. So write letters to your editors. Let your congresspersons know that nuclear is not acceptable to you. I mean, it's just going to take a huge effort. It's going to take time, unfortunately.
And education is premier. No one should have an excuse not to become at least basically educated on this stuff and to hear all the opinions. And as you say, Mothers for Peace gives a point of view that isn't widely heard and really needs to be. And I imagine every time you hear the report of yet another earthquake globally and in our area, it makes you cringe.
Well, of course. Yes, so, yeah, Mothers for Peace is a resource for Californians, and I mentioned NIRS, N-I-R-S, and another one is Union of Concerned Scientists. Oh, my gosh, I've got in front of me, and I pulled from it in preparing for this interview, their latest document, U.S. Nuclear Power Safety 1 Year After Fukushima. It's all on the website. Fantastic work by, you know.
And these are scientists who aren't on the take from the corporations that build these things, and that's important to know, too.
Right, right. These are truly a Union of Concerned Scientists, right? They're not influenced by lobbyists at all whatsoever. They are lobbyists. They testify in front of Congress and try to give the people's side the safety side, which we sorely need.
Jane, thank you so much. Mothersforpeace.org is the site. Learn more. It's up to you, folks. And, Jane, I salute you for your unwavering education of the public and your unwavering ability to go to these hearings to really pay attention to what's going on. We need more Americans just like Jane Swanson. Thank you.
Cool.
All right. Jane has been our guest. I think we're going to take a little break here right on KSC. I'll be back. We're going to talk about Secret Service and prostitutes and art and all kinds of things right here on KSCO.
With Afghan forces and transition responsibilities to them.
The data was obtained by the group Judicial Watch in Syria. Enthusiastic crowds surrounded UN observers visiting the battle-scarred city of Homs. They chanted for military intervention to protect civilians from government attacks. The Security Council today voted unanimously to increase the number of unarmed UN observers from 30 to 300. U.S. Ambassador Susan Rice.
The Syrian people, like us, know that the deployment of 300 or even 3,000 unarmed observers cannot on its own stop the Assad regime from waging its barbaric campaign of violence against the Syrian people.
President Obama says higher education should not be a luxury in the U.S. and in his weekly address urged Congress to extend a law that reduced student loan rates.
Congress needs to keep interest rates on student loans from doubling, and they need to do it now.
If lawmakers don't act, rates will double July 1st. Republicans think the president is not putting enough effort into the nation's biggest problem, Missouri Senator Roy Blunt.
Jobs, jobs, and jobs should be the number one, two, and three domestic priorities of the federal government.
Blunt also called on the president to approve the Keystone oil pipeline. A tough punishment handed out by the NHL today for uncalled-for violence on the ice. Phoenix Coyotes winner, a winger, Rafi Torres was suspended for 25 games for a brutal hit on Chicago's Marion Hossa. In a statement on the NHL website, league disciplinarian Brendan Shanahan.
This was a dangerous and violent hit that violated three NHL rules. Hossa suffered a major injury as a result of this hit. Torres has been fined or suspended five previous times, including recently, for hits very similar to this one.
This is CBS News.
Spring is just around the corner, which means it's time to get your RV and trailers ready to roll. Hi, I'm Rena Mills of RV Service Center of Santa Cruz, your locally owned RV parts and repair center with over 36 years of service to the Central Coast community. In addition to RV repairs, our qualified staff services and maintains boat, horse, and utility trailers and toy haulers. We also restore vintage RVs and work hand-in-hand with all insurance companies to ensure your RV is restored to its original condition. Get your RV and trailers ready to roll into spring with the help of your friends at RV Service Center. You'll find us easy to reach and easy to use at 2525 Mission Street, cross street of Mission and Swift in Santa Cruz. 831-427-0881. Again, 427-0881. Or you can email us at rvscsc.com.
Hello, I'm Robert Stangero. Many Santa Cruzans know me as Big Boy. The original Stangero family has been in business since 1879. Our name stands for quality, quantity, and great service. Our Gilda's restaurant on the Santa Cruz Municipal Wharf is still the fishing headquarters for the area. It's where fishermen gather every morning for coffee and breakfast before heading out on the bay. Stop by Gilda's and say hello. Both my son Dino and I look forward to meeting you at Gilda's at the center of the Santa Cruz Municipal Wharf.
Reach for the sky. Hello, I'm Chris Gilardi of Specialized Aviation at the Watsonville and Monterey airports. You can reach for the sky in one of Specialized Aviation's airplanes or helicopters. And it will be so easy, you'll wonder why you waited so long to fly.
Hello, I'm Mary McDonald. I'm an aerobatic pilot here at Specialized Aviation. Join us at the Watsonville Aviation Thrill Center for all kinds of extreme flying fun. I'm talking aerobatics from 3,000 feet, where you loop, roll, spin, and dance over the Monterey Bay. Or a graceful helicopter tour for that over-the-top view of all the magic the beautiful Monterey Bay has to offer. Or take on the adventure and challenge of learning to fly a helicopter or an airplane. Or jump out of an airplane and free fall from 14,000 feet. It's all here, and at prices starting at only $33.
Specialized Aviation at the Watsonville and Monterey airports. 831-763-2244 or sphelly.com.
Yes, it is loud. It is raucous. It is fun. So get up and go for it. Take the family. Take friends. Take the entire neighborhood to the rip-roaring racing fun at Ocean Speedway in Watsonville.
Get lucky Friday night for Ocean Sprints 2, brought to you by Taco Bravo. We're racing 360 sprint cars, four bangers, American stock, sport mods, and wingless sprints. Adults $17, seniors $15, kids $13, or get the entire family in for only $55. Get lucky for the Friday the 13th races.
Ocean Speedway is located at the Santa Cruz County Fairgrounds, just 2 miles east of downtown Watsonville on Highway 152. Get up and go for the loud, raucous, rip-roaring racing fun this Friday night at Ocean Speedway.
If electricity flows through it, you can save a lot of money by doing it yourself with the help of the experts at Santa Cruz Electronics. Hello, Charlie Friedman here. Listen to the things your friends and neighbors are doing for themselves with the help of Santa Cruz Electronics.
Xbox 360 repair.
Solar energy kits. Musical Tesla coil.
Video output for my home media center.
Building a new server.
Repairing a student radio station.
More RAM and a sound card.
DSL line.
Network printing, scanning, and faxing for dentists.
Replacing antivirus on 12 machines.
Wireless network for court reporter agency.
Diagnosing sound card problem.
Building a 5-kilowatt amplifier.
Ham radio antenna.
If electricity flows through it, you can save a lot of money by doing it yourself with the help of the experts at Santa Cruz Electronics. Voted best electronics store 2 years running. Call Santa Cruz Electronics today at 831-479-5444 or visit at 2808 SoCal Avenue in Santa Cruz. Do it yourself and save money with the help of Santa Cruz Electronics.
You're listening to AM 1080 KSCO Santa Cruz. It's 7 minutes after 11 a.m. here on this Saturday, April 21st, 2012. I'm Easton Allen with an update on your Central Coast traffic and your Central Coast weather.
This portion of programming on KSCO is brought to you in part by RV Service Center of Santa Cruz, your locally owned RV parts and repair center in Santa Cruz. RV Service Center specializes in all RV insurance repairs, and now offers service rebates equal to your insurance deductible. It's like you pay nothing. At RV Service Center, 2525 Mission, Santa Cruz. A proud member of Think Local First.
Thanks, Bill. Let's get on to the traffic. Highway 1 northbound near Light Fighter Drive on-ramp, we have a stalled vehicle reported there that's affecting your commute this morning. Other than that, a very easy ride on this beautiful Saturday afternoon. Clear skies across the Central Coast. Tonight, we're going to see some partly cloudy skies, lows in the lower 50s, and your highs today, highs in the lower 80s to mid-80s. Tomorrow, about the same forecast. Very nice weekend planned for you here on the Central Coast. Coming up next is hour two of the Saturday special. Filling in for MZ is Christine Kraft.
Oh, hello, darling. I hate to hang up on you, but... But you'll have to call back. KSCO has the inside track.
I'm Christine Kraft. Welcome, everybody. I'm in for Michael, and Michael and Kay are off cruising around the world right now. So we're going to talk about some fun stuff this hour, and I want you to call in.
But we really got to go to KSCO Radio. Bye.
What a cool intro. I'm really enjoying this. I'm Christine Kraft. I love to fill in on KSCO, and I miss living down in that area so much, trying to figure out how to get back there. Maybe Margaret can help me. Hi, Margaret. You are on KSCO. Good morning.
I can't help you.
Maybe this little lotto ticket will, huh?
Yeah. Hey, the world, you know, is so dangerous today. With even toddlers toddlers and grandmas are needing to be physically padded down just for traveling socially in an airplane. And, you know, Al-Qaeda, Al-Qaeda, whatever is taking over our farms or countries and our skies. And with HAARP creating so many earthquakes and tremors, I think nuclear sucks, okay? They irradiate our food with nuclear waste. The waste never dies. Only the earth dies.
Well, you know, there is radiation everywhere. And if you listen to Bill Wattenberg, who is a nuclear physicist, he's absolutely right about that. It is everywhere. The problem is with human beings, it's cumulative. In other words, if you have your background radiation in a lifetime, it may have affect some cellular changes. But why add to the insult, you know?
That's right. Why add to the insult? Great, great comment there. I think that as far as regarding preparedness goes, mm-hmm. that is an individual's responsibility. And that, number one, the individual has to be responsible, whether you're walking, driving, at home, at work. You've got to be prepared for something like this to happen. And then from there, the city council, you know, they can provide encouragement and checklists. And maybe even some reward stickers to the individuals and the families and the schools and the neighborhoods.
But here's the thing. Here's the thing, Margaret. If the media doesn't tell you about these things, because it really isn't all, it doesn't make you feel all cheered up and happy. It's maybe not as salacious as talking about Kim Kardashian's rear end or somebody's whatever. It's not an easy story. It's a hard story. And if they just don't tell you about it, how are you going to know?
Well, I know my insurance agent always tells me about it. And I'll tell you what, once you complete the preparedness checklists, then volunteers who go out and encourage and accomplish, you know, territories of preparedness, you know, bottom line is either you've got to be a useful community to our responders or you're just plain useless.
And I got to wonder, how many people who were, even folks who were in Santa Cruz in 1989, are now prepared, because it's the same thing in San Francisco, which is, you know, imminently could have another horrible earthquake yet again at any moment. And most people sort of blithely go around their way and they don't have stores of water, of food, ways to survive for a week or so with their family. We tend to forget that stuff. It's like the old, I don't know how many people will remember the grasshopper and the ant story that you play for kids. I had that record when I was little, and the grasshopper fiddles while the ants are preparing for winter. It's the same kind of thing.
Yeah, we've got to all get prepared and encourage each other to be prepared. Every time I see a beautiful family, I always ask him, are you prepared? And almost 100% of the time they say no.
You know what I recall being a little girl living in South Pasadena, California, when there was a very, very, very bad earthquake. And I recall, it's like the first one I experienced, I was just a little kid. I'm sleeping in my room. All of a sudden, there are my parents huddled over the top of me, trying to protect me in case something falls. That was my first lifetime experience with an earthquake. And I had several subsequently during the Sylmar quake. I lived in Santa Barbara, and I had this great four-post bed, and it was, you know, quite sexy and quite beautiful. And all of a sudden I woke up and the posts of the bed were rocking back and forth to the left, to the right. The chandelier was shaking, you know, so I've been through some, but I do know it's just human nature. We know some of these things are probably inevitable in our lifetimes, and yet we don't prepare enough. We'd sort of put it off for another day, like the grasshopper and the ants.
Right, just a simple PSA, power rotation, you know, public service announcements, just kind of like become a preparedness community and be a model for all other communities and neighborhoods.
Here's one little thing I mentioned when we were talking to Jane. I have this solar box cooker, and it may sound silly. Well, I live in a climate that gets, today's pretty hot everywhere all over the state. But in the summer in Sacramento where I am, it's unbearable. I don't like hot weather. But I keep myself sane. I have this totally cool solar box cooker, and I can bake bread in it. I can make all kinds of food in it. It takes longer. You got to set it out in the morning, and it's done maybe 4 or 5 hours later. But that's the kind of thing that should we had disaster, say bad earthquakes in California, if you had a lot of solar box cookers, they're not that terribly expensive. You can even make them yourself. You could heat water and sterilize water with it and use the sun to do that. It's just such a simple, basic thing. I wish more people knew about it.
Yeah, I've got one of those too. I've never used mine.
I want you to use it, you rat. Thanks very much, Margaret. Okay, here's the phone number if you want to join us here on KSCO. It's 479-1080, 479-1080. Of course, the area code is 831. I want to talk about some other things, and I want to welcome any artists who are listening or people who sell art or who are artists. And I'll ask you, the public, how many of you have any of the works of Thomas Kincaid? You know who he is, don't you? He's the so-called, or was, he died recently at the very young age of 54 after he had major alcohol problems. He's the so-called painter of light. Excuse me. It's estimated that one out of every 20 Americans has some Kincaid, and I use the term loosely, art in their home. Am I being an elitist? I certainly hope so. I don't consider what Kincaid did as art. And you may say, well, that's outrageous. Art is in the mind of the beholder. And if the little, I always looked at those paintings and you'd see him because he had factories that churned them out, mass produced art. He became mega rich. His factories churned out up to 500 paintings a day. So he wasn't painting them. He'd paint the first one maybe, and then he had these factories producing them. He was sued many times by, he said, these franchisees all over the country who would sell this stuff. In fact, this description, he got sued by many of them. He was accused of his business methods caused some problems. Gallery owners accused him of using his, quote, Christian beliefs, because he was always talking about the light and it's, you know, Jesus and I guess hiding in the cottage or something. It lured his investors to sign up and become franchisees, using his Christian beliefs to drive them into financial ruin. Now, those were the charges. In fact, one couple, this is a couple of galleries in Virginia, they invested their life savings into, and they really believed in him and felt his work was divinely inspired, etc. And so they became franchisees. Mr. Kincaid said, well, you'll become partners in spreading the light. You'll become blessed for your investment in selling my art. But then he forced them to sell his paintings at retail prices while he went on TV and sold them for much cheaper and, of course, undercut their business, ruined their business. They sued him. They went belly up, sued him. They got almost $2 million in damages. Another gallery owner sued him, praise the Lord, and won $1.4 million. The FBI was investigating Mr. Kincaid for defrauding investors. And then the factory that mass-produced this art, and there's a difference between the mass-produced Kincaid and the ones he actually did himself. There's a huge difference in price as well. Do you have a Kincaid in your house? Do you love it? Does it bring you joy and happiness? I always looked at them and thought of them as, you know, glorifying little Hansel and Gretel cottages with Satan in the basements. But here's the thing. What is art? Who gets to decide? I think probably most great artists are not terribly commercially savvy. They're just sort of driven to do their art, and then they die that way, and people don't recognize them until after they croak. That's kind of the an artist's fate. What do you think about this? Do you have any Kincaid in your house? Now, here's the number, once again, 479-1080. I'd love to talk to you about whether the paintings of Thomas Kincaid were art or schlock, or maybe a little bit of both, and who gets to decide. I actually like one of his paintings. It's a painting of Rockefeller Center, New York, the ice rink and the big Christmas tree. I think that's kind of evocative and pretty. I know that spot. But the rest of it, yuck, in my point of view. But that's just my point of view. I would never buy any Kincaid. The part that bothers me is his ripoff of the public in my mind, and in the mind of those who sued him, and apparently the FBI had some concerns as well. This invocation of Christ as his inspiration. It was all Jesus telling him to paint the light, paint the light. And yet his practices were hardly, quote, Christian, fair. He had some other behaviors as well. What do you think about this, Kincaid? He apparently even, and I know this may be shocking, but it's, you know, I'll have to tell you about it. He urinated on Winnie the Pooh. This is one of the funnier things about Thomas Kincaid, urinating on Winnie the Pooh. Apparently he had some beef with the Disney Corporation. And he was at the Disneyland Hotel in Anaheim, and he found light in the bottom of a booze bottle and urinated on Winnie the Pooh. Take that, Walt. This one's for you, he said, referring to Walt Disney. Well, we could forgive him, I guess, for urinating on Winnie the Pooh, or can you? But he had lots of his behavior was because he was a drunk about this. And he heckled Siegfried and Roy, who didn't. Went after some of his employees' wives, fondled a woman's breast at a signing party. You know, maybe he just couldn't see. Jeff, what do you think? You're on KSCO. Good morning. Unfortunately, Jeff, we have a bad connection. You want to call back and try again, and we'll put you right on. Sometimes it sounds like you're on a cell phone someplace. Yeah. Give us another try, Jeff, because you're out of range, or the wrong cell, but you're breaking up terribly, and I really do want to hear what you have to say, and everybody else as well too. If one out of every 20 Americans, it is estimated, has some piece of Kincaid art, quote unquote, he must have touched some nerve in people. They must feel, you know, some solace. Maybe this is art that matches the sofa. Clue, it is not art if you buy it to match your decor, all right? That's not art. You don't buy art to match your decor. That's interior design, not art. Am I being too much of a snob here about Thomas Kincaid? What do you think? 479-1080. Is it schlock or is it art? And if somebody gets solace out of it and they think it's art, isn't that enough? Yeah, probably. It is kind of sad, though, that someone who invokes, and you hear this often in folks who invoke their religion. I never trust anyone who invokes their religion and has to tell me how holy they are and how inspired by God. I don't believe it for a second, because if you really are a person who has strong religious values, you don't have to tell other people. You just kind of live your life and you sort of lead by example. And clearly his business practices and his life practices were anything but inspired by God. And yet many people bought it and thought that God was speaking through Thomas Kincaid. What do you think? Mark in Monterey thinks something. What do you think, Mark?
Boy, I was really surprised to hear what you were saying. I just can't believe it.
Well, believe it.
It's possible that Thomas Kincaid did have some shady business methods. I'm not too sure on that. And,
you can do some simple research, Mark, and educate yourself about all the times he was sued, all the judgments against him, and the FBI inquiry. Anyway, go ahead.
Well, you got to realize also wherever there's money, there's going to be lawsuits. And, you know, I am aware that he did mass produce his paintings, but what really appalled me or surprised me about what you said was that you said you liked one painting of his. Come on, lady. You know, Thomas Kincaid is one of the most amazing artists of our time.
He's amazing, all right, because he pulled one of the biggest cons that this country and this world has ever seen, quite frankly. And I'm not a lady. Let's make that very clear. I think it's schlock. I think it's crap. I think it looks like Hansel and Gretel cottages with Satan in the basement. Okay, that's what I think. I'm entitled to have that point of view. Now, I don't know. Do you sell his work and made a profit off of it? I don't know. Do you think it's Christian to rip off franchisees? Do you think it's a good thing? You say, oh, well, wherever there's money, there's lawsuits. Excuse me, Mark, but this guy got these people to sign up to sell his work, and then when they, and he promised them that Jesus would be with them, they'd be blessed, blah, blah, blah. And then once they gave him hundreds of thousands of dollars, what he did was went on TV, and he, by the way, contractually, under those agreements, and I am a lawyer, I'll just mention that, under those contract franchise agreements, he required them to sell these pieces at a price certain. And then he went on television and sold his schlock for considerably less for his own profit. You think that's a Christian way to do business or a remarkable thing? No. Where there's money, people are looking to get it, but you don't invite them to sue you by having such schlocky business practices. Absolutely irresponsible and illegal, as the successful lawsuits indicate, as well as the FBI investigation. I'm not making this up.
Well, there's one thing between an investigation and a conviction. In other words, you're guilty beyond a reasonable doubt. People have a free will. You know, if obviously people liked his artwork because they bought it. And I'll have to say, I've never bought his artwork, but I really admired it a lot. And for you to deny that he was a good artist is just, to me, appalling.
Well, it'll have to be that way, Mark. I thank you for the call. The phone number here is 479-1080. 831 is the area code, 479-1080. I'm sorry, if it's an artist who paints a lovely cottage or whatever with a magic light inside and somebody finds that that isn't schlock, fine, buy it. But when that same person is mass producing it in a factory, he's not painting it. Hello, Clue. That's not art. All right. Jeff is back, hopefully with a good line this time. Hi, Jeff. You are on KSCO.
I'm sorry about the bad connection. I just wanted to say one point is you have to learn to separate the art from the artist.
Sure.
To evaluate that original painting as one item out there in the world, and whether you like it or not, people are going to love some of his stuff. I love some of his stuff recently. The original stuff I considered a little chintzy, but I think it's really fun what he's doing. I think it's a lot of people enjoy it. I think.
Well, he's dead now, so he won't be doing any more. Of course, I imagine his factories will continue to spew it out. It's not done by him. He croaked at 54, found solace apparently not with Jesus, but in the bottom of a booze bottle along with his mistress. That's how he croaked.
So you're not separating the art from the artist, are you?
Well, yes, I am. I think it separates the art from the artist. Nothing spells or smells more like separating the art from the artist when it's mass-produced in a factory and he never touches it. Jeff, thanks for calling back.
I'm not talking about the art, lady.
I'm not a lady. Sorry. You can say that to your blue in the face, Jeff, and I think it's crap. I think it's Hansel and Gretel cottages with Satan in the basement designed to produce this, Jesus painted this, buy it. I think it's crap, and I think it's a con. I'm Christine Kraft. You're listening to KSCO.
Omega News Santa Cruz will hold its 22nd annual Ducky Derby and Carnival at Harvey West Park on Saturday, April 28th from 10:30 to 3:30. Admission is free and the event will be held rain or shine. Please join us for a fun-filled day at Ducky Derby with the entire family. There will be delicious food, carnival games, music, and entertainment. And 100% of our proceeds raised go back to our community via local charities and scholarships through Omega New. Call the Ducky Derby hotline at 479-4070 or visit our website at www.DuckyDerbySantaCruz.com for more information.
My name is Mickey Phelps, and I run Crown Catering, powered by Scotts Valley Market. We offer a full range of catering services, from formal to sit-downs to even cheese and wine parties. Let's say you want to have a nice get-together where a few women want to get together after work. We'll come and we'll actually choose some cheeses. I'll pair the wine for you, and we can all have a good time. I can get you up and running in just a few minutes. What makes us different from other catering companies that are out there is that we actually own a store, Scotts Valley Market. So if we need things, we can go to the store and grab them off the shelf versus calling in a distributor. We have them already available to us. We cater from 5 to 5,000. Bring it on, as I say. We are available 24/7, 7 days a week, of course. Crown Catering, 831-566-1425. And guess what, folks? You get to speak with the executive chef, Mickey Phelps. And that's me, folks.
Hi, I'm Brent Edwards, and I invite you to be a part of a wonderful program returning to Santa Cruz. Amazing Surf Adventures is hosting their annual fundraiser in support of Operation Surf, a recreational and rehabilitative surf experience for active duty military recently wounded in Iraq and Afghanistan. We invite you to golf for the soldiers. De La Viega Golf Course will be hosting a four-person team tournament April 19th. Also, April 23rd, there will be a meet-and-greet for soldiers at the Coconut Grove.
Hawaiian music, and hula dance. Dinner, live silent auction, emceed by Michael Olson, a Navy vet. So get your dancing shoes on and come and greet Wounded Heroes, April 23rd at the Coconut Grove. For more information on the golf tournament and the meet and greet, call 818-7225. That's 818-7225, or go to AmazingSurfAdventures.org. And don't forget to come out and watch these brave men and women take on the waves at Cowles Beach in Santa Cruz, April 23rd through the 28th, to witness this amazing experience. Thank you.
Spring is just around the corner, which means it's time to get your RV and trailers ready to roll. Hi, I'm Rena Mills of RV Service Center of Santa Cruz, your locally owned RV parts and repair center with over 36 years of service to the Central Coast community. In addition to RV repairs, our qualified staff services and maintains boat, horse, and utility trailers and toy haulers. We also restore vintage RVs and work hand-in-hand with all insurance companies to ensure your RV is restored to its original condition. Get your RV and trailers ready to roll into spring with the help of your friends at RV Service Center. You'll find us easy to reach and easy to use at 2525 Mission Street, cross street of Mission and Swift in Santa Cruz. 831-427-0881. Again, 427-0881. Or you can email us at rvscsc.com.
I'm Christine Kraft. I'm in for Michael. Michael and Kay are off going around the world gallivanting, and so I'm with you today on the Saturday special. We're talking about Thomas Kincaid, and someone said, well, what do you know about art? Well, I know I can't do it, but I do know it when I see it, and for many years wrote proposals for large public art grants, sculpture mostly, bronze sculptures in all parts of the country and all parts of the world. I have some relationship to what, and if you want to see what I think is art, I mean, just one simple example, go to artcitystudios.com. It's in Ventura, and I did some work for those folks down there, and that's my idea, I suppose, of what art might be. It's not something necessarily that makes you comfortable. It's not something you buy to go with your couch. And it's not something that you mass produce in a factory and say that it's original. It's not something you mass produce and say is inspired by Jesus when you are indeed ripping off people with your financial schemes and your boozing. I mean, it just isn't. Is John still there? Oh, John's gone. How about Melanie in Santa Cruz? Hi, you're on KSCO.
I understand that you're a lawyer and you're more enlightened than the rest of us.
Oh, I don't think so. I'm just an average lawyer who passed the bar after a long career as a television reporter and anchor, went to law school in my late 40s, passed the bar at age 50, and worked for several years as a disability lawyer and workers' comp attorney helping injured workers. I'm just your average lawyer who went to school awfully late in life to add a second career. That has nothing to do with art. But do you have a Thomas Kincaid? And for you, it's probably...
No, I don't.
Okay.
But I wanted to say, what is the purpose of besmirching his reputation? I mean, really...
I think he besmirched his own reputation, don't you?
Okay. Well, I think, you know, there are social amenities. And
okay.
You're going to make him suffer? Or
not anymore, because he's dead, Melanie, as you know. And the empire will continue. I don't think Mr. Kincaid is suffering one bit. Now, his lovely wife and four daughters, that he supposedly loved, they're left behind because he was found in the arms of his mistress, with whom he had many a battle that police were called to. So, you know, they're suffering, certainly, and I appreciate that, but... But I doubt very much, Melanie, that they're listening to a radio station, KSCO. I imagine they're pretty upset with him on their own, in their own right, don't you?
Yes, and I imagine that you're helping it.
Well, you'll just have to imagine that until you're blue in the face, Melanie. I appreciate that. You think it's a social amenity, and by, oh my God, we can't talk about anything at all that might offend someone's sense of what a social amenity is. I got to tell you, talk radio isn't much for appreciating those sort of social amenities. But I suggest you that you go out and buy some Kincaid, perhaps some of the mass-produced schlock, if it will make you feel better. Don, you are on KSCO. Good morning.
Hi, yeah. I wanted to let you know my opinion of Kincaid. He painted pretty paintings,
And even his factory that you talk about painted pretty paintings, he was commercially successful.
Mm-hmm.
And his paintings weren't crap. You know what's crap? That solar oven you're trying to push on people. It turns bread into
I want you to please eat as much bacon and as much meat as you can. I want you to never use a solar oven. How's that?
Hey, that sounds pretty good.
Yeah, so I'm not trying to push it on you. I think you should. And whatever
you know what? That's your liberal way of wishing me to die.
Why would you think that?
Because you think that bacon and stuff is going to kill you.
No, you have every right. In fact, you can stuff your gullet full of pig all you want. And I want you, another thing too, I don't want you to ever have a solar oven because that's just takes too long for you. And I want to also tell you something you should never do, and I'd say this to everyone who agrees with you. Do not go online, because, you know, it's the internet age, and Google this following name, and I'll spell it out for you. I don't want you to do this, but somebody else might want to. The name is Caldwell Esselstyn, Caldwell, the last name Esselstyn. He's a physician, a very noted one at a place you may never have heard of eating all that bacon. It's called the Cleveland Clinic. Please do not look him up. Eat more bacon. Do not use a solar oven. I'm not trying to push it on you at all.
Why not just let me look up Dr. Kellogg, you know, the one that would carry a turd in his pocket because he ate bread all the time and he wanted to show people how good Brown was.
What does the Cleveland Clinic have to do with that crackpot?
Why would I have to think about
that? I don't want you to look him up. I don't want you to look him up. I don't want you to care that autopsies done on 20-year-olds coming back from Iraq shows the first signs of atherosclerotic disease. I don't want you to know it all. Eat some cheese while you're at it. Okay? Thanks so much for the call. Ah, goodness. No, I'm not trying to push a solar oven on you. Whatever. You know, if there's an emergency and a bad earthquake in Santa Cruz and you have no way to heat water, I don't want you to use that solar oven because it would bother you so darned much to do that. It would just be so low tech for you. You know, why don't you burn the Kincaids? That'll keep you warm. Something else I want to talk about, the charming Ted Nugent. A rock star, I don't remember, Cat Scratch Fever, that was his hit, right? And he's now, much, much older. And he had a little contretemps with the Secret Service. And I want to know what you think about what he said. Mr. Nugent, and by the way, I'm a gun owner. I have several firearms. I'm not opposed to Second Amendment protections at all. I'm a liberal, but I'm conservative on a number of things, including owning firearms. And believe me, there are a lot of folks on the left who own firearms. It's not the purview of right-wingers only. I'm a 10th-generation American. I believe in the Second Amendment. I have the right to have those firearms, all of them. Okay, might even buy some more as far as that's concerned. So I'm not someone who believes your guns should be taken away from your cold, dead hands. I am, however, I'm also pretty conservative on immigration issues that might surprise you as well. I don't think anybody is absolutely, and I also don't get the word progressive. Why would liberals be so intimidated by Rush Limbaugh, a man I gave his first job in television, by the way, I know him quite well. Why would they be so intimidated that they wouldn't want to be called liberals? So I'm liberal on just about everything, but I'm conservative on a couple of things that I find important. I was raised by parents in San Marino, California, which I don't even think had any Democrats, okay? So in any event, Ted Nugent did the following thing, and I want to know and add this topic as well for our remaining time. He gave a speech, I guess it was some kind of NRA gig, and this idea that only right-wingers have guns is a joke. But he said the following. He said many things, but most importantly, what triggered the Secret Service's inquiry. And yes, I know they had a prostitute issue. Are they men, real men? I've dated a Secret Service agent, and I have to tell you yes. But in any event, he said, if President Obama is reelected, I, Ted Nugent, will, and you got to wonder about him. Do you think that, you know, because he likes to kill animals, right? And it's really you got to kill as many as possible in a lifetime because that's your God-given right, by golly, dominion over the animals. You got to wonder, do you think he gets aroused, I mean sexually, when the animal cries out in anguish or when it actually assumes rigor mortis? I'm not sure what it is for Ted, but in any event, He made the following comment. If President Obama is reelected, quote, I will either be dead or be in jail by this time next year, implying that he was going to harm the president. Clearly, it was a threat to President Obama. And clearly, when people, whether it's radio or any other, I'm sorry, what was that? Okay, we'll get to Bill in just a sec. You get a visit from the Secret Service, all right? I mean, that's just the way it is. Anyone who is getting Secret Service protection, if you were to say something like something nasty about Newt Gingrich that implied he ought to be, put out of his misery or some such thing, which I would never do, you would get a visit from the Secret Service, and most importantly, when you do it about the president. So what do you think about Ted Nugent getting a little visit and essentially getting off scot-free? If I were to say something like that on the radio, I'd probably be being detained. Don't you think Ted Nugent should have gotten more than just a little visit from the Secret Service, which he laughed off? So obviously everybody knows I mean the president no harm. What a joke. Let's go to our caller, Bill, in Carmel. Hi, Bill. You are on KSCO. Good morning.
Hey, good morning. I like you, by the way. I don't know if I'm a liberal. In some ways, I'm a liberal. I'm a Jeffersonian liberal. But I used to be a Republican, but I wouldn't have anything to do with either of these people. But what you're saying about Kincaid is a lot of that's true. And I know a lot of people around this town here, Carmel, Pebble Beach, Monterey, that were involved in business with that guy and lost a lot of money.
And they didn't lose money fairly because they didn't market the product well. They lost the money because he signed them to deals that they had to sell a piece of his crap, say, for $100, and then he went on TV and sold it for $80.
Right.
And so he undercut his own franchisees, which is hardly a Christian way to do business, is it?
No. So I like you, and I'm going to tell you, I was reading this thing talking about government and revolt, that subject.
Mm-hmm.
Just read you one sentence. It says, the history of revolts has had one thing in common, a policy of government by the few, for the few, and oppression of the many. And I think that's what we have going on right now in this country.
But you've always had it in this country. There's nothing new. If you study American history, it has always been government by the few, for the few, based on the oppression of or control of the many. There's nothing unique about our times in that regard, except the gap is growing larger in terms of the equities between the have and the have-nots. That's why when the president goes out there and suggests, you know, people making over $1 million ought to pay the same, you know, the Buffett rule kind of thing, and he gets bashed by Republicans. He's not talking about socialism. He's talking about fundamental equities. He's talking about the devolution of the middle class in America, which is not good for our country.
No, it's too bad everybody can't flourish and prosper that's willing to, you know, put in an honest day's work, and we can all do well. I don't know what's wrong with that idea. You know what I mean?
And I'd also like to see some of our efforts being spent on building the infrastructure, wouldn't you?
You could put 25 million people. That's the first thing I do. That's what Roosevelt did.
He yes.
Like DCC, he put people to work with a purpose. And you could put the electrical grid all needs to be rebuilt,
yep.
The water pipes, the gas lines.
Yep.
Factories need to rebuild. You could put 30 million people, and that's probably what's really out of work in this country, not
that's
the
right.
Phony numbers.
That's right.
30 million people to work in a month.
Yeah, and many people thought, well, you know, Obama's going to be Rooseveltian in that sense and do that, and there was much discussion of that. I hope he does it in his second term because we need it desperately.
Maybe we're related. You know that?
Pardon me?
We might be related because I don't know where you come in, but I'm a direct descendant of Edward Rutledge.
Well, my patrilineage came from Jamestown, Virginia, my father's side of the family, and goes back 10 generations. They established the first legal community in the United States. Funny that. Thanks so much for the call. Let's move on to our next caller in Carmel. Go ahead. Hello?
Hello?
Yes, go ahead. You're on the radio.
Hi. I have a comment about this Kincaid thing. I don't know really what the story is, although I do hang around a lot of artists, and I've been around a lot of artists, or mm-hmm. I actually might be considered an artist myself.
You'd love to have money. I mean, most artists are struggling. That's kind of the archetype.
Yeah, I understand all that. And, you know, if you look at artists throughout history, a lot of them, at least the ones that are very talented, don't really start off that way. They're not looking to make money. They're looking to do their art.
Sure.
And that's all they're doing. And as an end result, just like a musician or anybody else who practices over and over and over again, they get good at what they do, you know? And they're not doing it so that they can make a bunch of posters, you know, or eventually a lot of them end up doing that, though, you know, because their lifestyles end up taking them over. Picasso was like that. A lot of artists were like that.
Picasso and Kincaid are worlds apart, of course. And there's nothing wrong with being financially successful. The problem I have, and I appreciate some people like his work. I mean, a lot of people do. The problem is that most of it was mass-produced. And secondarily, he had these, on the one hand, he was the, quote, you know, it's inspired by Jesus, and this closer to God. And then he's ripping off the people he's contracting with. That's not necessary.
That's the thing that usually separate artists. This is what's their motivation. That's what I was trying to get to.
Mm-hmm.
But that, obviously, he's motivated by something else, which is a commercial reason. Where a lot of great artists, those that are pretty much timeless, are not necessarily focused that way. I know people that were paid enormous amounts of money just to paint a people's apartments. You know, back in the 80s and stuff like that. I mean, this one girl I know was getting $40,000 of an apartment. They were flying her all over the place.
She must have been quite good.
Oh, she was one of the best. But she wasn't, you know, if you knew her personally and you knew how she lived there, she lived in a one-bedroom apartment. You know, she didn't care about money or anything. She cared about what she did.
I think a lot of true artists care about money in the sense that do they have enough money to keep doing their art? That's sort of their relationship.
That's her whole thing. She just ate and she had a classic artist lifestyle. I mean, she had a tragic past and all this other stuff. I mean, you know, but her whole focus had nothing to do, and she had the capability of doing that. She could have sold herself and started up a team of painters and sent them out to do what she did. And eventually everybody started doing it, you know, later on down the road after they figured out what she was doing.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's the difference between the two. Either one's a capitalist or one is just an artist.
And there's nothing wrong with being a capitalist unless you're doing things that are criminal. And I thank you so much.
Your motivation.
That's right.
You.
Thanks for the call. And the phone number here is, where's my phone number? It's 479-1080. Let's go to John in Carmel. Hi, John. Or Santa Cruz, I'm sorry. You're on KSCO. Are you there? He's a very zen person. doesn't say. Go ahead, Gordy in Boulder Creek. You're next on here on KSCO. Good morning.
Good morning, Christine. About your, take on Ted Nugent.
Yeah, what do you think?
Well, I think your take is all wrong on this. Ted Nugent, this is in the NRA convention in Cleveland where he made this comment. It was taken out of text.
Did you hear the comment? Did you watch it at all? Did you see it? And heard the audience cheer when he said it? You don't think they understood what he was saying?
Oh, I know they understood, but what he was saying was that Obama will attempt to take away our guns, take away our rights, and take away our lives.
When has Obama tried to take away? He hasn't tried to take away any of my guns, and I got several. I mean, I don't get this. President done that?
Let me point out to you Eric Holder. Let me point out to you a number of people in his administration.
He hasn't been here either. They're not trying to take my guns.
Well, you're not very observant of what's going on in the Second Amendment community then. He has done everything. Well, take a look here at California, what's happened with our gun laws over the last 20 years.
20 years or just three? I mean, because you're saying Obama's responsible, he's trying to take your guns. So what has happened in 3 years to gun laws?
He is totally responsible, but he's following the same trend to disarm the American people. We've got these problems at the border where our own Border Patrol agents are being killed, and his administration has done absolutely nothing about that.
What did George Bush do about the border agents?
I'm not talking about George Bush. He made a lot of mistakes, too.
You know that the Obama administration has deported more people, and not just to Mexico, in 3 years than George Bush did in eight?
Well, he's also brought in quite a few, hasn't he? But my point is with Ted Nugent.
Has he?
Ted Nugent just doesn't go out and kill animals for the sake of killing. He eats everything he kills. He feeds people with the food that he can't eat. Mm-hmm. He's not a bloodthirsty person the way you're making him out.
Okay, well, I'll tell you what I think about Ted Nugent. I'll tell you what I think about Ted Nugent. I think he gets a stiffy every time an animal cries out in anguish, and I think that one of the parasites from that venison he so loves to kill has invaded his brain pan. That's what I think, and I thank you for the call. You're listening to KSCO, and you can call in 479-1080. Who's up next here, Easton? I'm sorry? Let's go to Scotts Valley and talk to Rick. Hi, Rick.
Hey, let me get you off speakerphone so that I don't scratch here. Hang on.
Appreciate it.
All righty. Is that better? Is that better?
I hope so. Go ahead.
Hey, we're having a turn in a... There we go. All right, I apologize.
That's okay. Thank you.
People get angry in their words fly and they get all, you know, out there and everything like that. But would you condemn Louis Farrakhan and Jeremiah Wright and
absolutely, absolutely,
good.
Of course.
So I feel the same way. And they, you know, people need to throttle back their anger and think about what they're saying. But I listened to Rebecca Costa and she made a point about the way people's minds evolve and whatnot. And I started listening to her a little bit. And I'm really conservative, but I said, you know what, I'm going to start listening to the other side a little bit more. And,
I'm sorry, and who were you listening to? I missed what you said because you are breaking up.
Rebecca Costa on Friday afternoons.
Oh, okay.
She's a sociobiologist, and so she was talking about the way the mind works, and I thought, you know what, isn't it amazing? And then when I heard how you took that, was that he would try to kill the president, and then they would arrest him, or they would kill him, and because he would stand.
But let me just ask you, if I were to say on this radio station exactly what Ted Nugent said, the Secret Service would be doing more than having a short visit with me. It was clear if you watch the tape of Mr. Nugent as he says other things that he can say. You can call the president a creep. You can do any of that kind of stuff. That's First Amendment protected speech. When you incite, however, people to violence, as in suggesting, and I'm thinking of what's-her-face from Alaska with the crosshairs over Gabriel Gifford's face, and, oh, we were just kidding, we didn't really mean it literally. When you do that sort of thing, you cross over into a different realm. When you say, if Obama's reelected, I will either be dead or in jail, his audience understood that he was saying, I'm going to take him out. And I'm sorry.
Absolutely. Just like Farrakhan said,
yes,
you know, you want to be a man, the only way you're going to be a man is to take out your black leaders because they've abandoned you.
I denounce all of it. And I think if Mr. Farrakhan had said that about someone the Secret Service is protecting, he would get more than a slap on the wrist that Ted Nugent got.
He didn't get slapped. I mean, he said.
Well,
black
he didn't.
Leaders.
He didn't say
I mean,
it about
talking about John Lewis. Everybody, no, all the people that are black leaders in America today. He said it's time to take them out.
So you're really hooked up into Trump, what Louis Farrakhan says. Do you get that from Sean Hannity?
No. I watched Louis Farrakhan myself.
And I wasn't aware that he said he was going to take out the president as Mr. I think
no,
Mr.
Black leaders, the same thing. It's kind of vague. That's why people sometimes take it one way or the other.
I think
other,
you're
like
right. The vagueness is important. However, Mr. Nugent was very specific. He said, quote, if President Obama
president he didn't. Gets elected. No, he said he didn't say he'd kill him. He said just if he got elected that he would be. Now, what if happens?
He said, and I'll quote it. Mr. Farrakhan is certainly not a president of the United States. Mr. Nugent said, if President Obama is reelected, I will either be dead or in jail by this time next year. He was very specific about who he's talking about. You have all kinds of First Amendment speech protections. You know, that's not one of them.
Why would he be dead or in jail?
Oh, come on, you're not that dense. You're a conservative, you're bright, you get it. You know exactly what he was saying. You know what he was saying. Okay, fine.
The president was alive and elected.
Yeah, I get it. That's right. Okay, well, I think that if you don't understand what Mr. Nugent was saying, you need to get your ears checked. Let's go now across the world because he's gallivanting around. That's Michael Zwirling. Hi, Michael.
Hey, and how in the world are you? it's real busy here on the street corner in Aruba.
Aruba.
I'm off the sort of
checking out the place here, and I couldn't help tune you in, and I wanted to call and thank you for keeping the seat warm.
Oh, the seat is so warm, Michael. And are you and Kay having a blast?
Yeah. Well, I mean, she's on the ship gallivanting around, and I'm off getting into trouble, shoreside here. But, I picked up some emails. My God, Christine, are you upsetting the listeners?
Thank you.
Oh, my God. I've never seen anything like
I am proud to do that because, you know, they have every opportunity on KSCO to call in and disagree. They have other programming that would disagree with what I said. And the genius of a great radio station, Michael, as you know, is having a place where different points of view are heard and counterattacked and all of that. It creates, you know, critical thinking, lets the audience have their say.
They only want to hear make nice, 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 nice. I don't know. Hey, listen, you're a Sarah Palin fan. Guess who I've met on the cruise ship?
Now, you know, I am the person who invented the phrase Caribou Barbie. Who did you meet?
Well, I met Sarah Palin's parent.
Her parent?
Her parents, yeah. Her mom and her dad. Very, very nice people. And if all goes well, I will have them both on a future Saturday special.
I bet you will.
From Alaska. So, that should be a blast.
It's a little difficult to hear you, Michael, so we're going to let you go back to Aruba and getting into trouble. Don't get into too much trouble, and I'll keep the seat warm for you. And you got people agitated who were listening, but I have a feeling that the audience is, it's good to expand out. Get people irritated, more people listen. It's a good thing. Thank you so much for calling in. Have fun.
Christine, see ya.
You bet. Okay. It's a little. I don't know what kind of phone they use from Aruba, but let's go to Troy in Scotts Valley. Hi, Troy. You are on KSCO. Good morning.
Hey, greetings, Christine. How are you doing?
I'm fine.
And a long distance hello to MZ and K out there in Aruba.
That's right.
And I called you up about Ted Nugent. I've been corresponding with Thomas Hughes. Him and Dave Michaels have a wildly popular show, The Week in Review, tomorrow on from 11 to 1 on KSCO. Have you ever listened to them?
No.
Oh, you got to. Those guys are hilarious.
I'm sorry, what are their names again?
Dave Michaels and Thomas Hughes.
Okay.
Yeah, their show is Week in Review tomorrow from 11 to 1 on KSCO. And, Tom's going to pull up the voice clip of Ted Nugent also the information of the Secret Service, and we're going to hash it out tomorrow for all the listeners out there. We're going to go all the way through it. Because I did hear bits and pieces of it, but I was getting the feeling that I was just getting one side of it, you know?
It's common sense if you hear what he has to say. I have no problem when he calls any political person or the president or anybody else. You can call him a jerk. You can call him a socialist. You can call him anything. That's First Amendment protected speech. However, when you say, if you say chop their heads off in November, that may just be a colorful phrase. He said lots of things about, you know, targeting and what varmints they are, and you got to target them. We got to pick up our guns and go. But when you say that if the president, President Obama, is reelected, I will either be dead or in jail, I don't think that's just a cute remark. I think it's a direct threat on the president. So I hope you have fun talking about it tomorrow as well.
You know, it's like when we were going to school, I grew up here in Santa Cruz County, and, our teachers and coaches, they say, you do that again, I'll kill you. That was really commonplace then, but you can't do that nowadays. Things have changed.
Well, might say that that's not a good thing, that it's political correctness gone amok, but the Secret Service has a particular job, and I think just a visit to Mr. Nugent wasn't quite enough. All of us on the radio have at one time probably had an inquiry from the Secret Service about something we've said, so I get that. I made some comment once about Dan Quayle and quail hunting, and I didn't mean it the way it sounded, but it sounded enough of a way that the Secret Service paid me a little visit. So, I mean, I get that. I just think that when Ted Nugent says, he doesn't wish the president any physical harm, I'm sorry, I just don't believe him. And I thank you very much for the call. I think we've got one more to go. Jan? Yes. Go ahead. You're on KSCO.
Hi, Christine. I'd like to mention a couple of things without you interrupting me because we're really close to the end of the hour. Number one, Ted Nugent is known by the Secret Service very well because he trains a lot of the Secret Service guys. Number two, I don't know if you know about Fast and Furious with President Obama. He's allowed thousands of guns to go into Mexico. He forced the gun dealers to allow these people to buy the guns, and they've taken them down into Mexico. Brian Terry, one of the border guards, was killed from that. All these cartels are running around with all these guns. I think people need to Google Fast and Furious. Bush had a program, but he tracked the guns. Obama doesn't know where these guns are at all. They Holder is has been grilled. He needs to be grilled some more because he allowed all of this to go on. And now we're dealing with thousands of guns in Mexico. These poor Mexican people are getting killed. And
I got news for you because we're up against the end of the hour. I'll let you go on for hours and hours if you'd like. I just have to wonder what you think about the fact that the Obama administration has deported more people in three than Bush did in eight. And I guess we're out of time for your answer on that one. I wouldn't want to limit your thoughts on this. And I get it. You've been drinking the Kool-Aid. Okay. The Holder incident, Fast and Furious, is widely investigated, as you know. Google Mr. Issa if you want to know more about his history. It'll make you blanch. I'm Christine Kraft. I've had a blast with you. No pun intended, right here on KSCO. See you soon.
KSCO, it's 12 noon.
CBS News, I'm Pam Coulter. Longtime Utah Senator Orrin Hatch, a target of the Tea Party, is fighting for his political life this afternoon.
I'm a tough old bird, and I've never felt more eager, more excited, or more energized, and that's thanks to all of you. So I ask humbly and respectfully one last time for your trust, for your confidence, and for your vote.
At a convention in Sandy, Utah, Hatch just failed to get the needed 60% vote to avoid a primary. He now faces a runoff vote with former state senator Dan Lillenquist, one of nine GOP challengers. Hatch looking for a seventh term in the Senate. Afghan authorities say they've derailed the planned attack on the Capitol. In Kabul, CBS's Clarissa Ward says five militants are in custody along with a truckload of bomb-making material.
Afghan security forces seized the explosives in a potato truck that had been coming in from across the Pakistani border. The truck did have Pakistani plates. Those explosives were hidden under 400 bags, 22,000 pounds of explosives. So really a huge amount of explosives likely to be used to carry out another series of coordinated attacks.
Figures obtained by the group Judicial Watch suggest drug use is a problem for U.S. troops in Afghanistan. Spokesman Tom Fitton.
We found a number of criminal investigations by the U.S. Army in Afghanistan of illegal drug use, specifically opiate-oriented drug use, and more disconcertingly, several deaths resulting from drug overdoses.
Afghanistan supplies 90% of the world's opium. Syrians in homes were happy to see the first group of UN ceasefire observers who toured a rebel-held neighborhood today. The visit coincided with a vote by the UN Security Council to increase the number of observers in Syria to 300. Russian Ambassador Vitaly Churkin.
This is the only strategy which can revert the cycle of violence in Syria and which can allow the Syrians themselves to work out the political arrangements for the future, which would be satisfactory to all the segments of the Syrian society.
Unnecessary roughness leads to a big penalty in the NHL. The league has suspended Phoenix Coyotes winger Rafi Torres for a brutal hit on Blackhawk Marion Hossa. CBSSports.com's Brian Stubbit says it's the longest suspension in 5 years.
It had to do with multiple factors, you know, in addition to the fact that he has a lengthy history. That's why it was so long. But the fact that a player was taken off the ice on a stretcher, that makes it look really bad for the NHL.
The hit occurred during Game 3 of the Western Conference quarterfinal on Tuesday. It's not clear when Hossa, Chicago's regular season points leader, will return to the ice. This is CBS News.
Hey, it's me again. Mike Rowe here at a Ford dealer with Fiona, talking tires. Fiona here was just telling me that about every 5 seconds, Ford dealers sell a tire. How's that possible?
Well, Mike, Ford purchases about 3 million tires a year.
Seems like a lot of tires.
We have a lot of tires, 11 major brands.
This is exciting. I'm keeping track as we go, and you just sold one right now.
We also have what's called low price tire guarantee.
How's that work?
We'll beat anybody's advertised price guaranteed.
And you just did.
That's correct.
There goes another one. You're not going to run out, are you?
Absolutely not.
Promise?
I promise.
There goes another one again.
Right now, buy four tires and get a $100 rebate at your Ford dealer. Name brands include Goodyear, Continental, Pirelli, Hankook, Dunlop, and Yokohama tires. That's $100.
Every 5 seconds, wait for it, and boom, it just happened. You sold one right now. This is very exciting. I could do this all day.
Me too.
I feel like we have.
Competitors ad required for tire guarantee. $100 rebate can't be combined with other tire manufacturer rebate or offer. See participating Ford dealer. Visit FordOwner.com for rebate details through 5/31/12.
Another milestone for the Queen of England, CBS's Larry Miller.
The Queen marked her 86th birthday with a bang. A 21-gun salute at London's Hyde Park. Her Majesty said to be celebrating privately, opening birthday cards sent from around the world. This is a big year for the British monarch, and her popularity is at its peak. In early June, there's a 4-day holiday weekend proclaimed to mark her 60 years on the throne. We can expect more big guns then. Larry Miller, CBS News, London.
An attempted plane jacking was foiled at a Los Angeles County airport. The Sheriff's Department says 25-year-old student pilot Troy Long tried to steal a 2-seat Cessna. Airport officials say he showed up at the office and began taking keys for planes, pulling out a gun when they tried to stop him. Deputies arrived to find him revving an engine in a plane that was chained to the ground. Pam Coulter, CBS News.
Good afternoon. You have it tuned in to AM 1080 KSCO Santa Cruz. It's 5 minutes after noon on this Saturday, April 21st, 2012. I'm Easton Allen with an update on your Central Coast roadways and your Central Coast weather. Start off on the roadways. Highway 17 near Sims Road. We have a stalled vehicle partially blocking one of the lanes there. CHP is on the scene. And In the Salinas area, 101 northbound near the Market Street off-ramp, we have a pedestrian on the roadway there to watch out for. 475-1080 is the number to call with your traffic tips. Your Central Coast weather for today, sunny skies.